Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Let's start with an article from AARP, the magazine, under Real People, Survivor. I lost all feeling below my chest and discovered my heart. After photography expert Marcy Malloy became disabled in a freak accident, she looked to her baby grandson for inspiration. And there is a picture of here of Malloy and grandson Dylan traveling at the same speed. Well, she has a huge smile on her face. He's laying back against her with a big giggle, you can tell, and his legs sprayed in the air. He's got on jeans and a striped shirt, and they look awesome together. In September of 2020, I went for a run in Golden Gate Park, a few blocks from my house, same as I always did. Late to meet my husband, I took a shortcut, tried to jump over a wall, and missed. The minute I hit the ground, I knew it was bad. I couldn't feel my body below my neck. The doctor who first examined me didn't deliver the news to me himself. I overheard him telling my husband, "She'll never walk again." It was my C3 vertebra, 1 inch higher, and I would have been on a breathing machine. As it was, I became a quadriplegic. After all the risky things I had done in my life, something so simple changed my life. At age 71, jumping over that wall was the last time that I did anything fast. I grew up as the daughter of a high-ranking Air Force general. We lived in Morocco, Paris, Korea, and eventually Washington, D.C. Maybe that explains why I could never stay in one place very long. I was a cheerleader, a hula hooper, always moving, and there were trips and adventures. I got a job as a stewardess for American, and when I tired of that, I worked as an au pair in Paris. I always had my suitcase packed. Somewhere along the line, I moved to Berkeley with a boyfriend. He lent me a camera, and I started taking pictures. I was fast, and I took many, many pictures. The first time I picked up a contact sheet at the store, the woman said I had a good eye. So I signed up for photography school. By the time I was 40, I was married with two little girls under 5, trying to make it as a freelance photographer. One day, I walked into the studio of a designer in San Francisco and walked out with an assignment to do a full-page ad for Vogue. Plenty of jobs followed, as did a divorce that had me running faster than ever to keep a roof over our heads. Of all the work I took on, my favorite job were the ones with babies. I got a reputation for being a photographer who could make even crying babies smile. I shot ads for Downy Fabric Softener. And if you were buying Pampers any time from around the mid-90s to the early 2000s, odds are the picture on the box was taken by me. I think I relate to babies because they're all about instincts, always moving, checking out their bodies, checking out the world. When I had to do a shoot with a baby, I would get down on the floor with him and look into his eyes. In all the years of shooting catalogs and ads, I can't remember a single baby I couldn't connect with. Things with men would get complicated. With babies, it was easy. I was 60 when I met Ron through a Match.com ad. But I wasn't all that interested in dating him. I had been on my own for over 20 years. No man was going to swoop in and take care of me. And anyway, he was too much of a straight arrow. I favored bad boys. But Ron was persistent, and I told him if he shaved off his mustache, I would go to bed with him. He said, "Where's the razor?" We had great adventures together. Every spring, we would do a home exchange in Paris. We raced go-karts. The year after we met, we were chosen to be on the CBS reality show, The Amazing Race. We did well on the first two legs in the U.S. and Japan before being eliminated from the game in Vietnam. But we had fun. Ron and I were a great team. We finally tied the knot after 12 years in San Francisco with my two daughters and his one attending. That was August of 2020. 3 weeks later, the accident. The experts said I probably wouldn't regain the use of my hands. I wanted to prove them all wrong. I went to rehab for 6 weeks, and shortly after I got home, my daughter Alexandra and her husband moved in with Ron and me. Their son, my first grandchild, was born 2 months later. On Dylan's first day home from the hospital, Alexandra put him in my lap and wrapped my arms around him. I couldn't feel his body, but I could look into his eyes and smell the top of his head. Every time he looked at me, his face lit up. All I had to do was hold him. The doctors told me that most of whatever progress I had made was likely to take place in the first year, so I never let up on physical therapy, working to regain what function I could. My father had always said, "We all fall down in life, but what matters is the steps we take to get back up." And I took that to heart. By the following spring, I could stand up with help. By summer, I was using a walker to get around. I still can't hold the body of a Nikon camera or change lenses, but I take iPhone pictures of my grandson. Rod lifts me out of my chair and sets me on the floor at Dylan's level. For a while, anyway, Dylan and I have a lot in common. Neither one of us can walk by ourselves. We both like it when someone helps us onto a swing in the park and pushes us. We both wear diapers. I was never good at doing nothing, at just taking in the world around me. Now I move more slowly, and I notice every small thing. In the old days, I focused on my outer life. Now I look inside and find a peace and acceptance of who I am. I am not racing, and quietness serves me well. And I spend time with my grandson. I wonder whether we would have been this close if I hadn't been injured. I wonder whether I would have paid as much attention to him as I do. Now I have my eye on a brand of camera that's light enough that I could hold it on my own and operate the shutter. After 14 months of grueling therapy, I can make my way across the floor with a cane. Dylan often pushes his miniature walker alongside me. When I watch him push his walker, I see my own determination reflected in his eyes. He takes a few steps, falls, then gets right back up. He will be taking steps soon without his walker. When he does, I intend to hold his hand and we will walk together. Marcy Malloy, 73, is a photographer and writer in San Francisco. Now for a look at AARP, the bulletin, the one with the cover story, Beat the System. Today we're looking at finding the best hospital and finding the best surgeon. Let's start with a hospital. Many U.S. hospitals responded to the COVID crisis by upgrading their systems to reduce the risk of airborne illnesses, but that can't overcome the human cost hospitals have paid these past 2 years. 87% of nurses surveyed recently reported they were burned out. We don't always get to choose which hospital we're treated in, but when we do, it's best to match our needs to the right facility. Read the right rankings. Numerous organizations rank hospitals, but a 2019 report in the New England Journal of Medicine rated the Raiders and deemed U.S. News & World Report its top choice. health.usnews.com/best-hospitals. Next in line was the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, star ratings. That's at medicare.gov/care-compare. Apply the insurance filter. once you know your preferred hospitals, check with your insurer to see if it covers services at them, or make sure they take your Medicare coverage. Then match the hospital to your needs. Just like doctors, hospitals often specialize. Some excel at psychiatric services. Others have specialties in bone health, oncology, drug abuse treatment, and so on. Going online and seeing what they have available is really helpful in terms of the subspecialty services. Check for a GEDA. That stands for Geriatric Emergency Department Accreditation, and it means the hospital has an ER that meets a higher standard of care for older Americans, according to criteria established by the American College of Emergency Physicians. And check the HCAHPS. Each year, more than 3 million patients from more than 4,000 hospitals complete an HCAHPS, pronounced HCAHPS, hospital survey on everything from cleanliness to staff responsiveness. Go to medicare.gov/care-compare and conduct a search to see how hospitals scored. And finally, in this section, check accreditation status. Make sure your hospital is accredited by a CMS-approved accrediting agency. The largest is the Joint Commission, a nonprofit that accredits more than 22,000 U.S. healthcare organizations and programs that meet its quality and care standards. Visit qualitycheck.org to see if your hospital has met the standards. Then, finding a surgeon. We like to think of surgeons as calm, infallible experts. But in a recent poll, 69% said there have been times they felt overwhelmed. So choosing a surgeon who's experienced and cool under pressure is paramount. Get hard numbers. Go to the American College of Surgeons, NSQIP, Surgical Risk Calculator. That's to be found at riskcalculator.facs.org. You'll be able to plug in your age, sex, weight, chronic and acute health issues, and other prevailing factors, and get a no-nonsense statistical assessment of the surgery's possible downsides and chances of success for someone who fits your physical profile. This is great information to have as you start your research journey. Then research your condition. You can't easily assess a surgeon or ask the right questions if you don't have a grasp of the ailment or injury that he or she is trying to remedy. Focus mostly on websites of accredited and medical institutions of government agencies, not just individual doctors or media companies. Then assemble the candidates. Your primary care physician is the best source for a referral, but also search your insurer's website for a list of surgeons it covers and consider them candidates as well. Then find the right letters. Doctors often have multiple abbreviations after their names, but look for FACS, F-A-C-S, Fellow of the American College of Surgeons. That means surgeons are not only board certified, but have also passed a thorough professional and ethical evaluation. Also, check your state's medical board for any previous judgments, complaints, or license violations and restrictions. You can find info on your local medical board at fsmb.org. Then ask tough questions, such as, how often do you perform this procedure? What complications have you experienced? What are the risks? The alternatives. Look for answers that are not only useful, but also that are given eagerly and openly. And then get a second opinion, just in case. Many medical systems refer to the surgeon within their organization, who may or may not be the best surgeon for your condition. A different surgeon may offer a different procedure or a different opinion. Now let's look at one more. Home, finding the best home remodeler. Not only are remodelers and their subcontractors facing a labor shortage and high demand for their services, up 25% since 2020, but supply chain disruptions are slowing building material deliveries to a crawl. All of this is boosting prices to eye-watering levels. Lumber costs jumped 218% in just 5 months in early 2022. Be patient, because finding an honest, experienced pro has never mattered more. Bias towards referrals. Remodelers are so busy, you might not get an estimate without a referral from a customer or another contractor. My business, this gentleman says, is up 40%. So my business plan is to stick with referrals. Ask this. When you talk with people about their contractors, ask what part of the project did not go as planned. Delay and budget changes are typical, but did the remodeler explain them honestly and offer sound options? And find out who will do the work. Will the person handling the bid be on the job? Who are subcontractors? And do they have the required licenses and insurance? Ask a potential remodeler if the same subcontractors are used for every job. Look for connections. A remodeler with several years' experience may have the supplier relationships and know-how to help get materials as quickly as possible. Some have staffers who will go with you to pick out everything, from paint and tile to washing machines and faucets. And finally, check their credentials. In ultra-busy times like these, less than reputable players emerge. Check online to see if your state requires contractors to register or to have a home improvement license. If so, ask your remodeler for proof. Also, ask for proof of insurance and certification by a professional organization. Now, the Complete Guide to Memory magazine from Centennial Health. Our next chapter here is entitled Sweet Call of Nostalgia. This guilty pleasure has often been dismissed as a hindrance, but a dive into the misty past can propel us into the future with hope and grace. And the little sidebar says, an excursion into the past is an indulgence best accompanied by old photographs, old journals, and if possible, a trip to your childhood neighborhood or home. Somewhere in the recesses of my online presence, I keep a virtual pinboard called Nostalgia. Its images are like stills from a jagged film of my childhood, a rainbow bright doll, her yarn hair pulled into a fat ponytail. An A4 Trapper Keeper binder with an acid trip cover. Models in moon boots marching across a magazine spread of a 1996 issue of 17. Brown leather Oxfords with the lace ends wound into corkscrew-shaped knots. For years, I felt a subtle kind of embarrassment whenever I added to this board. Had someone else walked into the room, I would have closed the browser windows, combing through these old images. Each of them bog-heavy with emotional resonance seemed just like another way to procrastinate. It also felt nakedly frivolous. What purpose could photos of the Babysitter's Club book covers or Orange Mall storefronts possibly serve in the present? What could I hope to gain from inhaling the imagined scent of the scratch-and-sniff stickers my first-grade teacher put on my papers? Even so, I couldn't bring myself to stop. Each thumbnail graphic was an invitation to ride a mental slipstream that could bore me along for 20 minutes or 2 hours, swirling in the eddies of reminiscence through brought on a flow state in which I felt outside of time, yet acutely conscious of its passage. What nagged at me afterwards, besides shame at having frittered away work time, was that I had no idea why I was so determined to spelunk into my past. I started poring over experimental studies on nostalgia, which felt like a more productive alternative to nostalgizing, and reached a conclusion that I hadn't expected. The research showed that far from lulling me into a click-drive stupor, my nostalgic journeys were feeding my inner stability, even girding me to pursue new opportunities I had not yet imagined. Long derided as a crutch, something we fall back on when the appeal of the present dims, nostalgia is a surprisingly sturdy launch point into the future. Not only does it ground us mentally and physically when the landscape shifts or founders, it focuses us with sensory immediacy on what we most value, and by extension, on what we want to reflect to the world. That's where its transformative power lies. Our collective disdain for plumbing our own past depths has hundreds of years of historical precedence. The word nostalgia, coined in the 1600s by the Swiss physician Johannes Hofer, is a portmanteau of the Greek words nostos, return, and algos, pain, implying that reflections on the past are shot through with suffering. Hofer used the words to describe a purportedly malady seen in Swiss mercenary soldiers who pined for their homeland. He believed that the disease's symptoms, including bouts of weeping and a lack of appetite, were caused by vibration of animal spirits through those fibers of the middle brain in which the idea of the fatherland still clung. Nostalgia's reputation scarcely improved during the Victorian era, when doctors defined it as a psychiatric disorder marked by rumination about times and places that could never be revisited. The condition, according to psychoanalysts, arose from a thwarted desire to regress to the early stages of life. It wasn't until years later that a warmer, fuzzier aura appeared around nostalgia. The French writer Marcel Proust, In Search of Lost Time, 1913 to 1927, in which the narrator tastes a Madeleine cake that lets loose a torrent of memories, did much to humanize the act of reminiscence over time. But while most critics no longer viewed nostalgia as a pathology, plenty still saw it as a pointless indulgence on a par with mud masks or gold-flecked hamburgers. Writing dismissively in a 1993 issue of The Baffler, Tom Vanderbilt said, "Nostalgia is a form of propaganda, an exercise in laughter and forgetting, in which the right visual iconography and perceived authenticity can create a longing for an existence which is no longer possible and was in fact never possible." It wasn't long before such warnings were plowed under by a nostalgia movement that took root on social media, and before that, in AOL chat rooms. Spurred on by dejected millennials and Gen Ys who yearned for a portal to a simpler time, this movement now shapes the contours of the online economy. Viral headlines such as 50 Things Only 80 Kids Can Understand fuel more clicks than breaking national news. Meanwhile, canny advertisers are using online pin boards such as mine as opportunities to market throwback goods, nostalgia porn, to a generation that seized on the pastime of reminiscence decades before anyone expected it. And we'll continue with that next time. Let's go back to AARP, the magazine, for one more section on finding the best real estate agent. This is the Consumer Guide Expert Edition. True fact, as of February, there were far more realtors in America than homes for sale. This imbalance means you have your pick of agents. What you're looking for, whether buying or selling, a great track record. intimate knowledge of your market, and an ability to listen to you carefully. Start with word of mouth. Ask nearby friends and neighbors whom they used when they bought or sold a house. Did the agent work as a true partner? Then check online lists and ratings. If you're moving to an area where you don't know anyone to ask, several websites list agents by neighborhood. Consider Realtor.com, Homelight.com, or Zillow.com. Count recent transactions. Type the names of possible agents into the Agent Finder tool at Zillow.com to find out how many sales he or she has made in the past year and how far above or below the asking price. And count years in business. This is a very Darwinian business. Only the fittest survive. People with 10 or more years of experience are your best bet. An experienced agent can handle surprises that might crop up after you've reached an agreement to sell your home. A seasoned agent knows how to deal with contract issues. Okay, with a couple of minutes we have left, we're moving on with these tips on how to save money. And we're at number 73, medicine. Consider generics. Authorized generics are made by the manufacturer of the brand name version and have the same active and inactive ingredients. There are nearly 1,200 on the market, including epinephrine, pens, and hepatitis C treatments. Insurance covers vary, so check first. Number 74, avoid pricey name brand combination drugs. Combo drugs are convenient, but often expensive. Buying the individual medication separately as generics could be far cheaper. This strategy can also work for brand name topical drugs for skin problems. 75. Ask your pharmacist about the best deal. Big news. Congress banned pharmacist gag clauses for Medicare beneficiaries in 2020. Having earlier done so for those with private insurance. But you still have to ask pharmacists. Pharmacists are not required to tell you about the best prices on their own. 76. Use a pharmacy discount card. A growing number of insurers, pharmacies, and other companies offer pharmacy discount cards that may get you as much as 80% off the list price of prescription drugs, making them more affordable if you don't have drug coverage or if you copay insurance or other insurance-backed cost is too high. Shop around online to find the best deal. And 77, rethink your supplements. A November 2020 Harvard study revealed no clinical measurable benefits to consuming multivitamins. But check with your doctor first. Folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.